Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are the leadership principles that drive Amazon's success? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Show, the smartest way to start your day. And in just a minute, we're going to talk to a former Amazon.com executive about their secrets to leadership and innovation. But first, a friendly reminder to follow us, LeadX Life, on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Snapchat. And remember, I answer listener questions every Friday on our weekly wrap-up show. You can submit your questions about leadership, productivity, entrepreneurship, really anything, by going to leadx.org/askkevin. Remember, if I use your question on air, we're going to send you a cool t-shirt or LeadX coffee mug. Today's one-minute career tip is the favor bank. Now, you're not one of those people who always asks for help but then never returns it, are you? Of course not. You know that it's a good idea to build up your favor bank. Instead of seeing the world as win-lose, see it as a place for you to always be offering value. When you meet someone for the first time, instead of thinking, how can this person help me, get in the mindset of, how can I help this person? Who do I know that might be a good connection for them? Treat everyone with respect. One day, your intern might be the CEO somewhere. People always remember how they're treated when they're the lowest on the org chart. Don't let poor behavior come back to haunt you. And finally, stay in touch. Don't wait until a former coworker gets hired by your dream company to reach out to them. Maintain a genuine rapport with contacts, no matter where they are in their professional careers. Always think of how you can add value to others. Our guest today is a managing director at Alvarez & Marsal, where he specializes in innovative business models and organizational change, including Internet of Things. Previously, he was an executive at Amazon.com, where he launched the third-party selling business, which today is over 50% of all Amazon units and supports over 3 million sellers. You may have seen him on CNBC or read about him in the New York Times. He's the best-selling author of The Amazon Way, 14 Leadership Principles of the World's Most Disruptive Company, and The Amazon Way on IoT. Our guest is John Rossman. John, welcome to the show.
Kevin, thanks for welcoming me.
Oh, it's great to have you on, and looking forward to chatting about your books in just a minute. But I always hit our guests with the same first question, which is, I want you to go back, maybe early in your career, pick out a time when you failed at something. Tell us that story, because we want to know, like, what were your lessons learned through failure?
Well, there's a wide portfolio that we could pick from here and everything. But, you know, I was an engineer, as an industrial engineer. And so I always approach things in a very kind of methodical and thorough manner. And as I was in the systems integration business, custom software development business early in my career. And where I had my failures was really in like connecting with people. Like, and so I really had to figure out and learn, like, how do you not just address kind of the technical or the business requirements aspect of a situation, but how do you create motivations, and how do you address kind of the emotional quotient of a problem and of a situation in addition to kind of the technical or the business requirements of it? And so that's where I've really, throughout my entire career, always have to keep reminding myself that you know, you really need to think in a comprehensive way beyond the technical and really get to know people and situations in at both a personal level as well as at an organizational level, and think all the way through those if you truly want to create lasting change.
Yeah, John, that's a story that, I mean, I certainly could have told myself, and I think it's kind of common with entrepreneurs, certainly, you know, technical people who are kind of ambitious and drivers as their personality. And, you know, I'll just speak for myself. I'm so much about, you know, the facts and the figures and let's make a decision and go, go, go. And I mean, I was a horrible boss. I must have been, you know, awful to work with, because I was just so single-mindedly focused on the problem or the technology, and I wasn't putting the people part of it together, which, you know, you can get away with for a while if you're a brilliant engineer, but for most of us, if we're a boss, it doesn't go very far. So that's a good reminder.
Yeah, I had a great mentor in my career, and he always used to tell me, he goes, you know, John, you're the most productive person, you know, I know, but what you need to allow for is more unproductive, productive time. And what he meant by that was like, take time to just slow down, especially with people that you're working with or that you're trying to make change with, and just, you know, let it air out a little bit. Like, don't always be focused on hyper productivity. And that, again, I have to continually remind myself, because, you know, your natural orientations don't change. It's just, you have to keep the awareness of, you know, your weaknesses or your natural orientation, and make sure that those strengths don't become your weaknesses at certain points.
Makes a lot of sense. And John, your books are focused on, you know, success principles or principles behind Amazon's success. And let's start with the first one, which addresses, you know, leadership. And, you know, I'm curious. So tell our listeners, what was it like working there? And what was it like, you know, being a leader there as well?
Yeah. So there's 14 leadership principles at Amazon. They weren't written down. They weren't codified when I was there, but you saw them being used every day. You know, the first one is about obsess over the customer, and the 14th is deliver results. And there's, you know, 12 in between those two. And what the thing I'd say is that these principles are truly used in everyday meetings and everyday situations by everybody in the organization to help make better, faster, more consistent decisions aligned to, you know, the strategy and the beliefs of the organization. And so these principles are real. And what I find lacking in so many circumstances is that, you know, while people may agree on an element of strategy or how we want to work together, they actually don't have a consistent or shared decision-making framework. And so when you can create a shared or consistent decision-making framework, then what you can do is you can let more people make decisions, and you can move faster and less bureaucratic. And that I think is a worthy goal for any organization of size. And, you know, working at Amazon was both, you know, intoxicating and awesome, but it's also like, it's a full contact sport. And so, you know, you are truly accountable. You have to make hard things happen, deliver hard results. You have to work in a very non-hierarchical organization. You have to get things done across a lot of teams, most of which won't report to you. Mm. And you have to be very, you know, multifaceted. In particular, you know, business leaders at Amazon are expected and know technology extremely well and know data and are able to dive deeper than most leaders at other organizations. And so it was great because you could get more things done faster and truly impact customers in the business faster at Amazon than any other organization of size that I've ever been around. But it did come with a lot of accountability, and it was an always on environment. And so anyway, it was a lot of fun, and I really took a lot away from it.
Now, you know, we were talking from your failure story about, you know, reminding ourselves about the emotional quotient and the people part. And, you know, I think the stories that outsiders like myself hear about, you know, Jeff Bezos, founder, of course, of Amazon, is that, again, brilliant, driver, innovative, all these things, maybe not the most warm and fuzzy guy to work with. Was that your experience while you were there too?
Well, I mean, he's a very funny individual, you know, and everything. And he enjoys a laugh more than anybody else, and everything. But, you know, he's out to change the world, right? And you don't get that, you know, what's the saying? Like, you don't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, right? Like, you have to be demanding, and you have to look for the right thing, not just the easy thing. And so I think what he's really created is an expectation that while we want to be collegial and we want teams and people to get along, if that comes at the compromise of not getting at things, you know, the right answer or things working exactly right or other types of compromises, then, you know, then we failed. And so he's demanding, but I think it was in a, you know, very, you know, appropriate way.
When it comes to Bezos, like, I actually think, you know, every now and then I get I get flipped around on, and I'm a guest on a podcast, and I've been asked, you know, more than once, like, oh, you could have dinner, you know, with any living people today, who would it be? And I actually often will say Bezos. I think he's I actually think he's an underrated entrepreneur, and now he's clearly known and up there, but I don't know. I mean, I think people still talk about, you know, Bill Gates and certainly Elon Musk now, and all the rest, but I sort of feel like the average person might not know who he is, or not, might not realize how successful and wealthy he was, you know, briefly, what, a week or two ago, the wealthiest man on the planet for the day. So, I mean, do you think he's sort of an underrated entrepreneur with all that he's achieved? Or you think, nah, you know, people are judging him about right?
Well, I think over the past 18 months, that certainly has changed, right? And that's because of the impact that Amazon has had, the number of different businesses that they're in and that they are uprooting and disrupting, as well as his own personal prestige and, you know, kind of the wealth ticker that goes along with that and everything. So I think until about 18 months ago, that was certainly the case. And I think it you know, kind of depends on the audience that you're talking about today and everything. But I think, you know, most leaders I talk to today, like, they've got Amazon now kind of in their focus. And it's either like, A, how do we compete with Amazon, or B, and I think this is the more interesting conversation, is like, how do we create these same types of outcomes of constant reinvention and operational effectiveness and operational excellence and a customer obsessed organization? Like, how do we create those things in our organization? And that's the type of business and the type of conversation that I'm interested in. And those were the goals for my books, was to help others take from a company like Amazon and figure out, like, how do we apply that into our own organization?
And, you know, with the second book, you know, again, The Amazon Way on IoT, which is Internet of Things, again, you kind of dial down more deeply about what we can learn from their business model and strategies in this area. Now, John, this podcast goes out, like, we have listeners in 148 countries, and I'm sure there are probably some IoT experts out there, but I'm sure there's also a lot of people who aren't even familiar with the term. So define for us, what do you mean when you're talking about Internet of Things, and where do we see it today, and where might we be seeing it, you know, a few years in the future?
Yeah, so IoT, or Internet of Things, or connected devices, they all mean the same thing, is the approach of putting sensors onto everyday devices to collect data and events, and then doing things with that data and events that otherwise you wouldn't do. And so it gives you insights into your services and products and how they're being used with your customers that you've never had before. And it allows you to either A, create and improve customer experiences, to B, drive for operational improvements internally, or C, to create new business models. And so IoT, you know, one of the things we always talked about at Amazon was that we had an inherent advantage in our business because we were a digital business, so we could always have more data than traditional analog retailers would have. And what IoT allows you to do is to create a digital shadow of everyday processes and everyday items that are being used in the business, to create that same wealth of insight and wealth of data and events, and to do it in a real-time manner. And so it's really a foundational capability that it will allow for ongoing innovation in businesses. And that's what I explore in the book, is like, so if you have this type of capability, how can you apply it to improve your business going forward? And so it's a book for business leaders to help answer the question, what should my Internet of Things strategy be?
That makes sense to me. And where would we literally see companies deploying an IoT strategy today? And does it include the sensors in our cars, the little Amazon button where I can just push it and reorder Tide, you know, on my washing right. machine? Is it things like that?
Yeah, all of those. You see it a lot in, you know, industrial businesses, on pumps, on devices, on flows, you know, to understand, like, how's it being used? What's the failure or maintenance need going to be? What's the environment that it's operating in? And so basically ask yourself the question, like, what data or what event would I like to know about something? And you can typically work backwards to a sensor and approach to be able to measure that and get it with a sensor. And that's the kind of inductive problem solving that you can now do using IoT.
And it's amazing. You know, just a personal story, John. I was a couple of years ago was out doing a talk at a big John Deere like reseller and service place in Upper Canada, and they were walking me around, showing me all these gigantic tractors that farmers would use, and they were telling me about the one farmer's got 10 tractors, no drivers, all being driven like remotely by GPS systems. And the sensors in the tractors, we know as the dealer when they need service before the farmer does. And at the time, this was almost 2 years ago. And I said, wow, I mean, I'm sure that day is going to be here before we know it. Like, that's incredible. And they're like, no, that's today. We're already doing that. And I had no idea. I mean, that idea of these self-driving and not quite self-repairing, but these tractors that are communicating back with, the service company was really amazing. And so clearly in an industrial way, it's really going out there. But I think we're seeing more and more of it as consumers coming into our homes as well.
Yeah, but I think, the point that a company like John Deere now becomes a data and a service company versus selling equipment is like one of the fundamental business model changes that you're going to see over the next, 20 years is transitioning from transactions and products to selling outcomes and selling services, and where the data becomes such a highly valued aspect of the business and of the product.
And tell me again, from a consumer standpoint, upstairs here in my home, the kids and I enjoy our Amazon Echo device and call out to Alexa every now and then. Now, is that just like, well, no, Kevin, that's just a separate consumer device. It's not really about an IoT strategy. Or is that a Trojan horse part of Amazon's IoT strategy?
So IoT can be both, consumer and, industrial or B2B, and sometimes a mixture of both, right? So when you think about healthcare, that's, partially consumer, partially, B2B types of scenarios. And so Alexa, or the Echo device, Alexa's the software that's on it, is definitely, that's actually a term I use in the book, it's a Trojan horse, because it's really a platform that allows Amazon to integrate to hundreds of other companies that deploy skills onto these devices to be able to answer questions and deliver services to Amazon's customers. And I think the fundamental change you're going to see is voice as a great user interface going forward, both at the home and consumer basis, but also in business, where voice will become yet another user interface. So it's definitely, Amazon's way of continuing to improve the customer experience, and it will end up driving business over time for them. But that's exactly the type of non-intuitive bet that Amazon makes into something where they don't know if it's going to work or not, but they know that it's like, man, this would improve the customer experience. Let's commit resources to do it. We don't know exactly what the financial payback is going to be, but that's truly when you're innovating and making bets are when you don't know what the outcomes are going to be. And now they have the clear lead in the voice recognition market.
Yeah. And I mean, what's your take? They clearly came out as leaders, and despite, say, the failure of their mobile phone, this has been a huge success. And now there's Google Home, Apple has announced, I think it's HomePod, right? Something like that. And so, is it going to be always this three-horse race, or how do you see the market sizing up for these voice-enabled, consumer devices?
Yeah, I mean, and I think Samsung's coming out with one, and everything, right? So I think it's going to continue to be a war of features and specialization. Like Apple's will apparently focus more on sound quality and things like that. But what I think is going to be more interesting is when devices have this voice recognition system in it versus just a separate speaker, right? And so there's now, home security devices and everything where they're using the Alexa software as essentially the operating system for the device. So there's not a separate speaker for it. It's like part of the object to have voice recognition to it. And so that's what I think the real mega trend is, and more interesting trend for me personally, is when you start seeing software like that into everyday objects. And so, you just say to your dishwasher, turn on, right? Instead of having to press the buttons, or, any other types of scenarios. So the software is not going to be a separate item in this little canister.
And I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, John, but I don't think we're too far away from any of that. I have a second home and it came with the Nest devices built in. And now I'm not necessarily using my voice just yet, but you know, there's an app where I can check the temperature and humidity and adjust the thermostats from anywhere in the world. I can watch the cameras. As you're saying, you can turn lights on, turn lights off, and control a lot of things in the home. And I certainly, I mean, already I'm bummed out. I've gotten so used to shouting out to Alexa. I'm bummed when I'm in my car and I can't, because that's when you really want to, you know, keep your hands on the wheel and stay focused. I would love to be able to shout out to my car dashboard, either how fast am I going or change the radio station or whatever it might be. But that can't be far behind, right?
No, and a lot of those use cases are already being enabled today, but it's really the quality of the experience, I think, still has a long way to go, right? If you think about talking to your voice assistant today, how many times do you have to repeat yourself, you know, and everything, right? And right. So I think both the use cases and the quality and just the vast extensiveness of the enablement still has a long way to go. But there are, as you point out, like a lot of these early, especially home-based scenarios that are being opened up today. And I think about like the business implications beyond the home, where the business environment is going to be more impacted by these capabilities.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I like to challenge our listeners, you know, to become a little bit better every single day. And again, we have a wide variety from senior execs to a whole lot of first-time managers and people who aren't yet managers, but, you know, they aim to be as quickly as they want to climb up as quickly as possible. So I'm hoping you can challenge us with one specific thing, you know, maybe from one of your books or just your own life experience. Like, what's something you'd tell us to do today to get a little bit better?
Well, here's a real piece of the secret sauce from Amazon, which is they don't use PowerPoint. So they always write out their important proposals or projects or ideas as narratives. And so stop doing PowerPoint and force yourself to write out with clarity what you're proposing or what your big idea is. And it needs to be written well enough and simply enough so that another person with some background in a scenario could read it and completely get it, right? And so if you can write both like holistically and clearly enough to be able to explain it versus dumbing it down with PowerPoint where you need to explain it, that will improve your thinking. And so that's really why they do it at Amazon, is they don't use PowerPoint and they develop these narratives.
And is it true that when people call meetings in, there will be time in the meeting to actually read some of the, you know, like instead of sending the handouts ahead of the meeting and of course nobody reads them, you'll actually carve out time, or you would carve out time to read them in the meeting?
Absolutely. And so, you know, meeting starts with 10 or 15 minutes of silence where the narrative is read and then discussion ensues. And you can really tell the quality of the narrative by what types of questions then ensue, right? And so the higher quality questions are going to be more implication type questions or alternative type questions versus questions that like, well, explain it to me again because I didn't quite get it. Well, that's an indicator that the narrative wasn't quite on base yet. But the meeting absolutely starts with time to digest it and truly understand it.
That's interesting. And to boil it down even further, I mean, you've had such a successful career, you know, what advice would you give to someone who's, you know, maybe just out of college and starting out on their way and they're ambitious, they want to be viewed as a high potential. What advice would you give to someone like that? How do they stand out at work?
Well, I think for a first-time manager, you know, one thing that I got to work with several ex-Navy submarine officers. And one of the things that happens in a naval submarine is that an officer is able to do every job that's underneath their command. And so ostensibly, the captain of a submarine could do every job on that submarine. And so I think that as a first-time manager, truly having the skills to be able to do every job that's underneath your function will give you insights into being able to better manage, better innovate, and better support your team. And so I think that's a good challenge, not in every circumstance, but for a first-time manager, you know, I'm thinking about a limited scope of business. truly having the mastery skills of everything that happens underneath that, like, you know, it's a great way to earn the respect of your team. It's a great way to have better empathy. And it's a great way to truly have insightful insights to be able to innovate. And if you want to be able to advance in your career in this times, in this economy, you can't just get the job done. Like, you actually have to improve it. And so, you know, setting that up for being able to actually have insights to improve the business going forward, I think is the critical mindset that every business person has to bring to their job.
That's great. So tell our listeners, how can they find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. So my blog is johnrossman.com, and you can go there and learn more about me and the books. The books are available at Amazon in both, you know, paperback, Kindle, and audio version. And, you know, my email's both at my blog and on the books.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure we include these links in the show notes and, of course, the articles as well. John, thanks for coming on to the LeadX show.
Kevin, thanks for inviting me and thanks for everything you do out there.
LeadX family, don't forget, you can get links and notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And you can also download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. And if you want to get more LeadX in your everyday life, just follow us at LeadX Life on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. That's one word, LeadX Life. And if you've ever gotten even just one good idea from a LeadX show, do me a huge favor. It takes less than a minute. And just subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave a quick rating. Just go to leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, friends, remember, leadership is about influence, which means we are all leaders. Whether you're a salesperson or a soldier, an entrepreneur or an executive, a coach or a counselor, you are leading all of the time. You positively influence with your behavior, and you influence negatively when you're a bystander. How will you lead today?